Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's noon, which means it's time to go blitzing on Grant and Danny. Next segment, I will get into Josh Doctson. I want to get your thoughts and calls on him with 1 week left this season about what his future upside is and whether you think he could ultimately become a number one wide receiver here in Washington. But right now, let's kick off the blitz talking about the Redskins. Rick Snyder writes at thefandc.com, among other outlets, joins us now on the Beltway Blitz. Snyder Marks, I was checking out your piece on our website about what Sunday's win meant for Jay Gruden. It's back-to-back wins where his team has played hard for him. Do you think that matters, big picture?
Well, I think it matters in that there's no more gossip about his job, regardless of Cincinnati. But will it carry over to this last game? This last game's still irrelevant. Kirk did say, hey, 8-8's not 13-3, but it's not 7-9. Sure, but the real truth is, 5 minutes after this game's over, players have forgotten it.
I think you're right. And to me, the offseason and the Kirk Cousins future and what they do at positions of need is still going to far outweigh what happened in December. But where are you at on carrying over or carrying momentum into an offseason as it pertains to if they could go 3-0, whether or not this organization and program's better for it come next September?
See, I don't think it's anything like, say, San Francisco, which just won 4 straight. They're going to bring a lot of that team back next year, and it's going to carry over some. This one, of the 53 men that exit this locker room, half of them won't be there opening day next fall, and this season will be ancient history of that roster. So I don't think it really matters at all.
What's your take on Gruden right now when you take 4 seasons, took over a bad team, they make the playoffs in 15, have an awful finish in 16, and then this year as it was? Big picture, what do you think of Gruden?
I think he's been a good coach. I think he's kind of on par with Norv. Look at what Snyder's tried to do, hire superstars. Did any of it really work out? No. He went and got a traditional assistant head coach and brought him here, and I think he's done a good job. And this year, I think he's done a good job. I mean, 20 guys on the IR, no receiving core, no running game, and you still might be 8-8. That was a pretty good effort.
What's your take on Josh Doctson? A lot of people are saying this is his rookie year, and so he's going through some of those issues on the field. He has been able to stay healthy, which was the big knock, but he's just so inconsistent.
Yeah, I just think he's a guy. And I know you say, oh, look at these touchdowns. Most of his touchdowns have just been like wide open like Sunday's was. He's just wide open. Just catch the ball and go in. You didn't see him in the back of the corner of the end zone fighting for these balls. That's what they brought him here for, the red zone. He's done nothing there. I think he's just a guy in the end.
He had that big Moss kind of catch where he outleaped defenders and tucked the ball away in Dallas. But 6 on the season,
you're
right. A few of them have just been kind of like, hey, Ryan Grant would have done that too. So I get it. Rick Snyder of thefandc.com is with us. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate the time.
All right, see you.
Absolutely. Let's talk to our pal Neil Greenberg, talk a little hockey. Neil, last time we saw the Caps, they were having a really tough go of it in Vegas against the Golden Knights. Did we learn more about the Caps or the Knights in that fateful game and the shutout loss?
Probably a little bit more about the Capitals. I mean, we knew the Golden Knights were one of the better teams in the NHL. Would have liked to have seen Washington bounce back from that loss against Arizona. You and I watched that game together. The Caps did not look good. So I was hoping to see a little bit more of a spark against the Knights. It just didn't work out.
3 days off, including tonight. They will play the Rangers tomorrow at Madison Square Garden, getting back to work. And as you said, they suddenly have 2 losses to overcome. Overtime against the Coyotes and then the 3-0 game with the Knights. So suddenly, as hot as they were getting back to the top of the division, they got 2 huge games in the conference coming up with the Rangers and the Bruins, who have been playing well.
Yeah, the Ranger game in particular is going to be an important one. You look at the Metro standings, there's only 1 point separating the top 3 teams, and then you have only 5 points separating the next 2, one of which are the Islanders and then the Rangers. You look at Boston, they're the 3rd best team in the Atlantic. So this is definitely a game that Washington needs to come away with 2 points only to keep pace of what they've been doing in the conference, because even one loss, especially to a division rival, could put them down in the pack. And with as close as they are in the Metro, especially this season, they just can't afford to lose these type of games.
The New Year's an unofficial benchmark generally in hockey where you kind of take inventory on what you've got. If you're a Caps fan, how should you be feeling? At one point early this season, I kind of felt like, man, this is going to be a real struggle to make the playoffs. Now they have a good chance to win the Metro and to be a high seed. This has gone really well.
Yeah, so far, but they still remain a little bit confusing, right? I mean, they had the clunker against Arizona, arguably the worst team in the NHL, arguably one of the worst teams we've seen in NHL history, at least in recent history. They've had some flashes of brilliance. They were able to beat Tampa Bay. They had a good games against Toronto, some of the better teams in the East. But this is a team that still seems to struggle a little bit with consistency, perhaps a couple days off. Maybe TJ Oshie gets a little bit healthier. And they've always played up to the Rangers. There's been some good rivalry games there as of late. But I agree. I think the Capitals need to be a little bit more control of their own destiny in the Metro, or at the very least looked a little bit more like a contender than they have over the past couple games.
You're hosting a show with our own Tom Daly tonight right here on 106.7 The Fan, Crashing the Net, an all caps all hockey show, the only one in town. What's on the docket this evening? What can people expect?
Well, we're going to talk about just what you and I just talked about, what to make of this Washington Capitals team heading into the new year, what to expect. I mean, just try to get a handle on it, because so far it's been up and down, but it seems like the ups and the downs have been a little bit more extreme than they have been in the past.
Neil Greenberg covers the Caps and all things DC Sports, Washington Post. Nobody better at crunching the numbers and using statistical analysis. Neil, thanks so much. We appreciate it, buddy.
Sure thing. See you tomorrow.
You bet. That is your Beltway Blitz. And if you want to see Neil Greenberg live on television, you can watch him, as he mentioned, tomorrow. I will be hosting pre and post with him at NBC Sports Washington, ahead of the Caps and the Rangers. I'm excited. It's been 3 days of no hockey around here. That's too long. But I do like, and I give the NHL a lot of credit, that they give the teams off for the Christmas holiday. I mean, you look at basketball, the schedule, teams traveling, media members having to travel, the NFL with a couple games last night. The NHL said, hey, we're shutting down business. Everyone go your separate ways, celebrate the holiday. We'll be back at it again later in the week, which is respectable as well. Josh Doctson is as maddening and also captivating a player as there is on the Washington Redskins right now. What is he going to be a year from now and 5 years from now? What are your thoughts on Doctson's development? I will take your calls at 800-636-1067. Next, I'm going to give you my thoughts on Grant and Danny.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back, Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Day after Christmas, hopefully you got some time off with the friends and the family. If you're back at work, I salute you. The few, the proud, we carry on. Just went to the kitchen area and bumped into someone from the other side of the building where all the business gets done. I said, wow, I didn't know anyone was here. He said, yeah, there's a couple of us. It's a quiet building here at 1015 Half Street in Southeast Washington, D.C. today. But happy to be keeping you company, talking a little football and sport. Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines are open for you at 800-636-1067. You want to chime in, you can tweet the show at Grant H. Paulson at any point, and I'll read some of your responses. Josh Doctson caught two passes, including a 49-yard touchdown on Sunday against Denver. He went for 61 yards on those two grabs. He was targeted 13 times. Now, the target count is entirely misleading. For a couple reasons. One, targets get correlated to a player on any play and in every play. So if Kirk Cousins is rolling out on a bootleg and just throws the ball six rows deep, basically the closest guy to that incompletion is getting a target. And that happened on a play in the back of the end zone on a third and goal where Josh Doctson was quote-unquote targeted, but really Cousins was throwing the ball away as he was about to take a sack, wanting to stay in field goal range. There's a few plays like that. There's a throwaway to the sideline where Josh Doctson is the closest guy, so that's a, quote, fake target, if you will. There was a play where Kirk Cousins burned a screen pass into the ground with some pressure in the backfield. Probably actually could have made the throw and just hit Doctson. I think he thought maybe the play had been blown up more than it was. But let's say you take away four of the 13 targets as kind of false, and it's only a 9-target game of actual passes thrown to Doctson. To have only caught 2 balls on 9 targets is a big problem. One of the reasons I was skeptical last year of Terrell Pryor during his breakout, and a lot of people this offseason said, let's slow our roll on crowning this guy, is that everyone said he made 70 catches for 1,000 yards, and that was true. But what wasn't as talked about is he got targeted 140 times. The percentage of catches for targets is a big deal. How open are you? How consistent are you? Sometimes it's drops, but a lot of times it's just, is it a high leverage, high difficulty throw because you don't have separation? Is it more difficult because someone's draped on your back? It can be revealing. Doctson had a couple bad drops. He got interfered with on the play in the end zone that would have been maybe a second touchdown in the game. Of course, he had a ball hit him right in the chest that he dropped for a touchdown as well. And the first third down of the game, he had a ball go right through his hands. Good coverage by Aqib Talib, who's outstanding. A lot of people gave Talib credit for breaking the play up. He was able to break the play up because the football sailed through Doctson's hands to the waiting defensive back. If you attack the football, which was a reoccurring theme and a problem in the game, he has more catches. There are throws that were on Cousins as well, as far as targets he didn't have. I'm not doing a bash Josh Doctson segment. We'll get to all the good in a second. But one specifically, when the Redskins got the ball on their second drive, they were right at their own goal line. Cousins threw a pass on, I think, second down on like an out route where Doctson had a handful of yards and probably a first down, and it was just way overthrown. That's a throw Cousins probably wanted back. There was a deep shot where Cousins was trying to find Doctson, who had a step on a defender, and it was a hair underthrown. Now, if Doctson a year or two from now doesn't attack the football there to draw a pass interference, which he easily would have done by stopping and going up for the ball, I'm going to be upset with the wide receiver as well. Instead, I'll just say that that's a play that ideally you make next time. But he's just raw. He doesn't yet make the plays all the time that win you football games. He makes them sometimes. You go back to the diving catch against Seattle. That was great. Go back to the New Orleans game. I thought that was a really impressive first half for him. He disappeared in the second half. But he went up and caught a 30-yard contested pass. He almost came down with another ball in the end zone where he was out of bounds. I mean, he was just sent, Randy Moss and people, just out-leaping them and catching the ball, pulling it right out of their hands. 50-50 matchups. That's what he gives you. He's not wide open a lot. He's a long strider, so he's got speed in that way, but he's not quick twitch or explosive. He's not winning off the line of scrimmage a ton, which is what worries me a little bit about him underneath as we move forward trying to make him a number one wide receiver potentially. There isn't a lot of explosion to his game. He's kind of a finesse. Everything's at the same pace. I'm going to run 75 miles an hour all the time, and it's going to look very smooth, whereas Pierre Garçon is a million miles an hour, get to my mark, cut, million miles an hour. They're almost different in how they run routes, 100% antithesis of one another. I am still enamored with Doctson. I still love his game. He is the kind of guy that every team needs one of because he makes you right as a coach and as a quarterback. I have seen him do things that not only has no Redskins receiver been able to do over the last several years, there are like 5 guys in the NFL that can do some of the things he's done. The leaping catches hanging in the air, the acrobatic athletic plays in the back of the end zone, the drop he had on a near win against the Chiefs that he got vilified for incorrectly. That's otherworldly next level stuff to almost catch that pass. The touchdown in Dallas on the throw, an incredible pass over a DB by Cousins to just give him a chance, is ridiculous. There's just 6 or 7 guys in the NFL that make that grab. So I know he's got that in him. He's got that in the tool belt, if you will. It's the rest of the time. He's a shortstop who makes that ridiculous play deep in the hole and makes the one-hop throw from the outfield grass. But it's that routine ground ball that he boots that just drives me nuts. Still too many drops and still just not enough production. You look at the numbers, 2 for 61 this week. The 49-yard catch, don't take credit away from him. There's no reason to. But also, understand the perspective that any player on the team and any wide receiver in the NFL scores on that play. It was a busted coverage out of a stack where no one was within 20 yards of him, and all he had to do was catch a punt, basically, and walk into the end zone. This is not hyperbole. Assuming you listening right now can jog without pain in your feet and ankles, you would have scored on that play. You would have. So you can't give him a whole lot of credit for the 48-yard touchdown, just like I wouldn't give Cousins a ton of credit for that play either. You just made the play that needs to be made that everyone at your position in the league would make. Other than that, it was one catch for 13 yards in the game. Last week against the Cardinals, two catches for 16 yards. A week before that against the Chargers, three catches for 34 yards. And a play on a slant where he got beaten by a DB where it just can't happen because it leads to picks way too often. Luckily, it didn't on that particular play. I mentioned the amazing 14-yard touchdown against the Cowboys. He had two catches for 12 yards other than that. The week before that against the Giants, 2 for 28. I loved the first half against the Saints. He went for 80 yards. He didn't catch a ball in the second half. Had 30 yards receiving against the Vikings. The awesome catch against Seattle to win the game at the goal line was a 38-yard grab. Other than that, he had two catches for 21 yards. Week before that against the Cowboys, first game against Dallas at home, one catch for 1 yard. Week before that against the Eagles, one catch for 3 yards. So my point is, I guess he had three catches that week for 30 yards. But my point is, eventually at some point, production's just got to matter. And are we there yet with him? We're definitely going to be there in September. I am still giving him a little bit of a pass on the lack of numbers because I think Jay Gruden's getting used to him. When I've talked to Kirk Cousins about him a little bit, Cousins is still learning about this guy. He didn't practice a lot. He's still figuring out what he can and can't do, what he does well, what he doesn't do well. I am basically saying this is Josh Doctson's rookie year. That's how I'm viewing this. And if you look at it through the lens that he's a rookie, I actually think you'll come out of this year pretty optimistic on him. Because even though the production's not great, it's a lot of 2-3 catch games, it's a lot of 25, 30-yard games, there's enough spectacular. There is enough leaping grab. There is enough, oh my gosh, I remember when Randy Moss did that to someone. There's enough, that's A.J. Green. That you can hope a little bit that this guy's the real deal, that he's elite, that he's special, that he's something very, very good that you just unwrapped under the tree. No reason to sit here right now and pretend like that's the case. My question I want you to answer, and I'm going to answer this next, and I think my answer may surprise you a little bit. Do you think Josh Doctson ultimately is a number one wide receiver? That is my question. Because you've got 2 years now, and this is when you got to start making some of these decisions if you're an NFL team. Do I draft another guy early? Do I sign someone for a bunch of money? Do I let him continue to develop as my number one option and kind of go cheaper at the wide receiver position? The Redskins have to decide that right now after next week. What's your answer if you're running the show? 800-636-1067. And what is Doctson in 5 seasons? I want that answer as well. I'm going to give you my thoughts next. Set that up. I'll take your calls. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Missed Kirk Cousins on the show at 11 a.m. Fear not. You will hear it in 25 minutes. We'll re-air it for you at 1 o'clock. He joined us exclusively today on Grant and Danny. We talked about our upcoming event with him, January 5th, noon to 2, Jam and Java in Vienna. If you're not there, you can listen to the show, and for 2 hours, you'll hear Cousins being interviewed by us and answering questions from audience members. But you could be one of those audience members talking to Cousins. He's going to discuss and recap the 2017 season, what went right and what went wrong, and also look ahead to his uncertain future in Washington. All of the ticket proceeds, we're selling them at jamandjava.com right now, benefit the D.C. Dream Center. Details are at thefandc.com/events. They're selling quickly. Speaking of events that are selling quickly, 106.7 The Fan Live sold out already. This is the late January event at Tally Ho Theater where the Junkies, Chad, Danny, myself, all get together on stage for a non-FCC-regulated event where we could say and do whatever we want and tell you about behind-the-scenes stuff that goes on at the station. It's a pretty cool idea. The only way you can get tickets now, though, because they are completely sold out, is by listening to Chad Dukes versus the World. Starting January 15th, every afternoon at 5:20, he's going to be giving away a pair of tickets leading up to the event. which is presented by the Purple Heart Foundation. So that's how you'll be able to win those tickets. But if you don't have them now, you better be listening to CDVTW because that's the only way to get in. For more on 106.7 The Fan Live, you can read up on it, thefandc.com/live. I want to get to the phones in a second, 800-636-1067. As I welcome you back in, I'm talking Josh Doctson. I find him to be enthralling and captivating, but maybe the better word is maddening. He has so much potential and does so many things so well. But then you watch him this past weekend and you're pulling your hair out. He drives you out of your mind. The dropped touchdown is inexcusable. We get that. The drop on the first third down of the game's a killer. But then there's routes where he's not open. I'll give you another example. He did nothing wrong on the pass interference at the goal line. Nothing. That is a route, though, that Jay Gruden drew up on Wednesday or Thursday hoping he gets man coverage in the slot for Josh Doctson, because there's no way he's not going to win this so badly inside that this is an easy touchdown. Other side of the field a little bit earlier, Kirk Cousins broke it down. You'll hear that at 1 o'clock if you missed it. Jamison Crowder gets an in-breaking route in man coverage with a safety not being able to help. It's the easiest 16-yard touchdown of the season for Cousins to throw. A little bit later on, closer to the goal line, obviously, Doctson needs to win inside. You get a step, you win, you score the touchdown. It was a good throw by Cousins. It's a pretty good route by Doctson. He has his arm held by a DB that didn't get called for what should have been a PI, should have been first and goal from the one, or a touchdown catch. Tried to one-hand it. But I promise you, if you go back and watch that same route run, that same kind of look and concept from Jordan Reed, he wins so quickly at the line of scrimmage and so decisively to the inside that there is no pass interference to worry about. Because if you're grabbing him from behind, A, it's so obvious you're getting the call, and B, you're basically grabbing a lot of body. You can't just reach and get his hand because you're right next to him. A year or two from now, Josh Doctson is going to be wide open on that play. He just wasn't on Sunday. Those are the areas where I know he's going to improve and get better. The little nuanced route running things where you just get a guy behind you, you wall him off, and now you've won or you're drawing a flag. There are other things, though, where you go, what is he? Is he a number two? Is he a number one? 800-636-1067. I got a tweet here at Grant H. Paulson from VA Born who says, I still say you wouldn't love Doctson nearly as much if Scott McLuhan had not drafted him. I think that's incorrect. Scott McLuhan drafted Matt Jones. Go back and listen to the audio over the last few years. I've never really liked Matt Jones. Jones I liked in the first month he was here. He looked the part. He had the big 100-yard game against the Rams. From about mid-season of his rookie year on, I've looked at that guy and I said, this ain't it. This is not what NFL running backs do look like and how they perform if they're going to be good. You know who still loves him? Scott McLuhan. I talked to McLuhan from time to time. Recently, I talked to him and he said, Matt Jones is going to be a great player. I'll disagree with him until the cows come home on that. Here's what I like about Doctson. Has nothing to do with who drafted him. He's fast, he's huge, he's got great hands, he's uber athletic, and he makes circus catches. He makes quarterbacks on 50-50 balls look good. You need that in this league down the field. He can outleap people. That's what I love about Josh Doctson. My answer to the question that I'm going to get to the phones on right now, Josh Doctson to me is probably not going to be a number one wide receiver who's an upper echelon like A.J. Green, DeAndre Hopkins player. I do not see that in his future. I think those guys, the difference is as big as they are and as fast as they are, long striders like Doctson, they are more explosive and a little bit more quick twitch. He just doesn't have that. To me, Doctson, I don't even want to call him a number two because that's probably not exactly what I'm looking for as a description. But he is a 70-catch, kind of 1,100-yard, how-did-he-make-that-catch type wide receiver. And you need someone else really good doing a lot of the dirty work underneath. You know, like he would be the perfect fit to be opposite of Pierre Garçon, as an example. They play the same position, by the way, very differently. I think Josh Doctson, if you want me to put a number on him, is a number two wide receiver, which is not a bad thing because I think he's going to be amazing in the red zone. I think he's going to be great down the field when he's not open, as you've seen this year. He has 6 touchdown catches right now. 6. In a disappointing year where he's going to catch like 37 balls. He could easily catch 12 touchdowns in a season. Easily. He dropped a couple this year. just off the top of my head. He's probably had three that he could have caught. That's nine. In addition to three or four near misses. And so even this year, he could have close to a dozen. So he's a double-digit touchdown guy and a big threat in the red zone who probably catches about 70 balls. A.J. Green, he is not. Go back and look at his first season. He went 10 for a buck 24 in his second game. He had 100 yards four times as a rookie. DeAndre Hopkins kind of similarly had 100 yards his second game. Now, he had a lot of one and two and three catch rookie year kind of games as well. So it's not quite like A.J. Green when you look at the discrepancy from Doxson. But I just don't see that type of upside. I want to know where you guys are at on him, though. Love the player. Still very high on him. I think he's going to be really good for a while. And the last thing I'll mention before I get to the phones, all of the conversations about how he's always going to be hurt, he's never going to be healthy, you're never going to be able to trust this guy, that is over. After this coming week against the Giants, he will have played in guess how many games this year? 16. 16 games this season and made 14 starts. Stayed healthy. Didn't have those issues. So enough with the, it was a fluky thing as we talked about. Enough with the, oh, this guy's always hurt. He played in 16 games. That's a big deal. Let's go to Jimmy in Fairfax. What's up, Jimmy?
Hey, Grant. This is such a great topic. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for the call. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, too. I have so many questions about Doxson, but the thing about him, I think he got a kind of a raw deal in the first half of the season because he really didn't get a lot of targets.
True.
And he did get open. I mean, I saw some article a couple weeks ago where they were showing plays where he got open and Kirk didn't see him. So that's one thing I want to mention. Also, I am surprised about the drop balls. That's what disappoints me about him because, you know, he's got these great hands, and I don't understand why when he's open he can't show that. But there's one aspect I haven't heard anybody talk about, and for some reason, I may be wrong, but it kind of bothers me when a player won't talk to the media. It seems like there's some kind of a mental thing going on. Or
yeah, that's annoying to me as a media member, Jimmy. Thanks for the call. He doesn't talk to the media at all. I'm not holding it against him as a player in any way. I wouldn't do that. It makes no sense. I mean, you're not good enough not to talk to the media, dude. Just period. Ryan Grant doesn't talk to the media either. That's ridiculous. You're Ryan Grant. Someone needs to remind him of that. You could do yourself a lot of good just by being a professional and having a relationship with the media. I don't know why he doesn't talk to the media. His mom at Texas Christian, I think, was involved in like PR or something. I mean, she's very sharp and eloquent and deals with the media all the time in her capacity there. I have no idea what his deal is with that. And I have no relationship with the guy. I don't know. I've interviewed him a couple times. Maybe he's just not comfortable doing it. But it's not a good look. I agree with you completely. I'm not going to allow it to kind of color my thoughts on him. But I do want to get into your comment on the targets early in the season because I've got a response to that that I think is important for this conversation. And let's do this next. Well, if you're on hold, we'll get to you. We're going to bang out all of your calls on Doxson before Cousins at 1 o'clock. So it'll be more of you, less of me next. Where are you at on Josh Doxson is the question. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. If you missed Kirk Cousins at 11, you can hear the full interview, him talking about the Broncos game, his holiday, and previewing our big event on January 5th, which tickets are available for at jamandjava.com. It all happened a couple hours ago, so that is coming your way at 1 o'clock. We'll re-air it for you. 800-636-1067. Josh Doxson makes huge plays and plays that very few guys in the league can make every couple of weeks, but then the consistency is a big problem. What is he a year from now, 5 years from now? Do you think he can be a number one? Vic's in Akakeek. What's up, Vic? How are you, Coach?
What's up, now? How you doing, Grant?
Good, man.
That's good. That's good. I don't think as much as a sample size, enough of a sample size to say what he will or won't be just yet. I have four receivers I'll bring up to all Hall of Famers: Andre Reed, Michael Irvin, Chris Carter, Tim Brown. They, on average, of the four of them, only had maybe 40 catches a year before they start reaching the peak of their careers or the top of their careers. Andre Reed only had four 1,000-yard seasons, if you go back and look at it. And he's a Hall of Famer. I think we just got to – I'm not saying – I totally agree with you. The drop passes, sometimes the lack of separation on routes, they will open your eyes if you're playing, if you're watching with a football eye. But I don't think there's enough of a sample size to say that he won't be what we expect him to be, or what his talent says he could be. He does some things that really open your eyes, and you would like to think with leaping ability, with the ability to stretch the field when with the long strides, Michael Irvin was the same thing. Andre Miller was the same thing.
Yep.
Tim Brown was a little more quick twitch. Chris Carter wasn't that fast, but he could get open and he could catch the football. He has pretty much somewhere, like you said, 70-catch guy, 1,000 yards, 1,100, 1,200 yards. That's the type of guy he is. Michael Irvin was just more consistent with it. Chris Carter was more consistent with it. The only receivers we knew that blew the top off the defense the first 2 years was Jerry. Before it was Jerry, after it was Jerry, was Randy. So I think we got to give him a little more time. I will say this before I go, though. Every player in the past 20 years, most of them are system players that have become excellent in a system.
Yeah.
The only two players that we've never seen, three players that I remember in my lifetime, was Barry Sanders, Deion Sanders, and Lawrence Taylor. Josh has to be in a system. Not to say that the system is bad for him. I think Jay Gruden is an excellent offensive coordinator. I think he's a horrible head coach. And I don't know if the Redskins system is solid proof enough to give him all the opportunities to grow and become excellent.
That's a fair question. What I would say is some of the comps for his game, I'm not saying he was supposed to be this guy at all. One went in the top five in the draft. The other one went outside of the top 20, but both first rounders. The thought was he's kind of like a little bit smaller A.J. Green in terms of how he plays, boxing people out, going up and getting rebounds, making the jump catches, beating you down the field. Jay had a lot of success making A.J. Green look a lot better than he has since Jay left there. So that's where I think there is a fit here that you can make this whole thing work. Doxson can track the football better and better as he goes. I love your point, though, on the great receivers you brought up, like Michael Irvin, who went 32 for 654 as a rookie. Now, Doxson this year is going to go, right now he's 31 for 465. I mean, he's going to end up around 35 catches for 500 yards, probably. This is, you don't have to view it this way. I'm going to. He played twice last year. He was hurt all season, didn't get to practice. This, to me, is his rookie year. I'm high on him because I saw at Texas Christian at a level where he was comfortable and where he was confident and where he went out onto the field expecting to dominate what he could do every single week. I think when he gets there, you got a really, really good football player. But someone brought up when they called in the lack of targets early in the season, which is the drum I was beating, and I think it's a fair critique. He didn't have enough balls thrown to him. Part of that is on Gruden not designing enough for him, maybe. Part of that is on Cousins not throwing it to him more often, whoever you want to pin it on. There's a reason that Gruden didn't design more offense for him. Some of it is he wasn't around and healthy and durable, and he didn't trust that he was going to be there on Sunday. The other part of it might be he's inconsistent. I'm not going to design a ton for a guy who, on a 13-target day, might catch two passes because that's going to hurt me. If I'm Cousins, he's made me look right a few times. He's made me look great on the 30-yard throw in New Orleans, the touchdown for the Cowboys, the throw for Seattle. But there's just as many plays where he's made me look bad as well. He's dropped a pass or run a little bit different than I expected on an incompletion. I think they're still kind of honing their relationship, and that takes time. So the targets thing, while yes, it is, I think, part of the argument for Doxson, it can also to some extent be used against him because his lack of availability in practices and last year and really up until the middle point of this year kept you from really committing to him. So I think that's got to be viewed both pro-Doxson and anti-Doxson. Chris and Reston, what's up? You're on Grant and Danny. How are you?
Hey, Grant, thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Listen, man, I'm glad to hear you mentioned his Texas Christian days. I'm a TCU alum here living in Northern Virginia, and I watched Doxson for 3 years at TCU, and his quarterback down there was Trevon Boykin, who was essentially a read option quarterback, spent 1 year with Seattle, I believe. He wasn't the most exact, accurate passer I've ever seen in my life, and to me, Doxson at TCU kind of reminded me of Odell Beckham. He was always making these crazy one-handed, behind the shoulder, over the head, crazy catches, just asking yourself, wow, how did he do that? So I don't think he's ever going to be a 1,200-yard receiving guy, but I think he can be a 10-touchdown-a-year guy.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I would be shocked if he's not catching 10 touchdowns in the next couple of seasons. Again, he's kind of stubbed his toe into six this year, and there have been three balls that very easily could have been caught, and you're looking at nine in a year where a lot of people listening have been disappointed in the kid. He's going to get better whether he's a number one or not. We could debate that. Again, I say number two because I'm thinking like 70-ish catches, 1,000 yards, and around 10 touchdowns. Here is who I think he is. I've been trying to think of the perfect comp for him, and I just can't come up with the guy. The closest thing I can think of right now is Marvin Jones from the Detroit Lions. Marvin Jones, who last year went for 930, this year is over 1,000 on about 60 catches, averages 17.9 per. Last year was 16.9 per. I think he is a better version of him. I think he is going to make more spectacular plays than Jones does, but Jones is a ball attacking, kind of leap ball winning acrobat in some ways down the field. I think he is kind of a rich man's Marvin Jones. But he's more that than he is Green or Julio, one of these great number ones. Kirk Cousins was on the show earlier today. You'll want to hear what he had to say about his interception. I have not heard him basically crush himself for a throw to the extent that he did this morning at any point this season. Grant and Danny on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.